I'm Jerry Robinson on behalf of the Friends of Gibraltar Oral History Project. It's the 17th of September, and I'm with Major General Richard Keithley.
Keithley, the hard T.
With a hard T. And Richard, you very kindly agreed to participate in. I wonder if we can start by you say a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your family history.
Yes, why not? Well, I mean, I was born in Aldershot, which is a lovely military start to a life. My father was in the army at that time, and my grandfather on my mother's side had also been in the army, so I had quite a strong military background before I even started. And then all my uncles had served in either the First or the Second World War, and so there was a lot of military influence on my life right from the word go. I went to a local school, went on to Marlborough, then went to Sandhurst, and after Sandhurst, I joined my father's regiment, the Inner Sea Dragoon Guards, who at that time were in the Suez Canal Zone in Egypt, where we were for a bit until we were required to leave by the Egyptians and by the political situation. It was rather ironic, really, because I then went to Catrick as a training regiment. We were in Catrick as a training regiment, and I was a subaltern at that time. And when the Suez Affair brewed up in 1956, I was asked to go back by my father, which is nepotism, to be his ADC, which was a wonderful experience and very interesting for me. And the headquarters was in half in London, half in Cyprus, and so I did a bit of both those. And then listened to the airmen being briefed on their missions over the Canal Zone. It was ironic to hear them saying, you drive down the Canal Zone, you turn right at Chandur Camp, which is where I'd been stationed while I was over there. However, that was an interesting start to my military career. And then it was fairly traditional from then on. I regimental service, staff college, and then into various staff jobs, then into a brigade in Germany, and quite a lot of time spent in Germany at that time because of the Cold War. I commanded my regiment in Germany. I then went on to the Joint Services Staff College at Latimer, then on to command a brigade in Germany, and then came back to London where I did the Royal College of Defence Studies. Then I had a couple of jobs, one in Shropshire, and then the last job I did was at Sandhurst, where I was commandant. Right. And then thereafter, having left the army, I cast about and I worked in the health service for 20 years as chairman of various health boards and things like that. And now here I am in Dorset, deepest Dorset, well retired, farming, playing around with animals and generally enjoying myself in the countryside and working with St John Ambulance, which is a good charity. So that's me. And my brother was also into the army for much the same sort of reasons. He will tell you about his life. But he sadly got wounded and he spent a lot of time in Gibraltar recovering from that. But that again is another matter. And my first visit to Gibraltar was with my new wife because we got married in 1958. And at that time, my parents had come over for the wedding. We were married in London. And because we were going to south of Spain, to Malaga area, for our honeymoon, we went down there via Paris and Madrid, and then we spent a night in Gibraltar to recover our wits and pick up a car to go on, my parents' car, not a military car. And it was quite fun, because the staff in the convent, which is the governor's house, had clearly been briefed to leave us on our own. And so when we were going to have a meal, we never saw anybody. The meal was there, a tray had come round the door, you know, the young married couple had to be left on their own. So that was a wonderful start to our married life. And at that time, and all the time that my parents were there, the convent was a really happy family house. It wasn't in any way official, and certainly my parents used it as a family house. They used all the main rooms. They used the drawing room upstairs for their life. They used the main dining room for their meals and things like that. I understand that now that is quite different, and the present governor, or the one before, was retired to a small wing, one end of the convent, and it's a much more DIY world. I think my mother and father were very lucky, because at that time, those sorts of houses were properly looked after by a staff, and one inherited a staff, and they had a wonderful house sergeant called Colour Sergeant Wheeler, the Royal Marines. I don't know how many people worked in the convent, but quite a lot. And the offices for the governor and his staff were downstairs in the basement, in the, what they call the bomb-proof shelters, they all were called.
And that's lovely. You mentioned, just going back a little bit, You mentioned that your family was quite steeped in military service. So can you say a little, do you know very much more about your grandfather or your uncles and that period in the First World War?
My grandfather commanded the Devonshire, Regiment in the First World War, and he then moved on. He did various jobs, and he ended up, his last job, I think, was at Sandhurst, where he was, probably a college commander as a brigadier, and or maybe he was deputy commander, I don't know. But he was there, and he had his daughters there, of course, and that's where my father met my mother. And so that was how that happened. My uncles, my grandfather's brothers, and his cousins were in the Navy mainly, mostly naval people. And they one got killed at Jutland, and one was killed somewhere else, another naval battle, I don't know which. I'm just trying to think what else they did. My mother's brother was in the Gunners in the Second World War, and he lost an arm in France. He was the youngest brother, and but again, he was another military influence. And my father himself, he joined the army and went straight out to India. Well, he went to Egypt initially, then straight on to India after about 6 months, where he spent eight years. Then he came back with his regiment to Aldershot and to Colchester and to York, and then he went and did an attachment to the German army just before the Second World War, where he learned about their armour, because he was a cavalry officer. And he was mounted when he joined the army. But he was one of the not very many senior or middle rank cavalry officers who realised that mechanisation was essential. And he, therefore, early on, learned about armoured warfare, with one or two were a bit dyed in the wool and wouldn't leave their horses, which was...
And this was obviously...
This was in the 30s.
The experiences around the First World War would have...
Well, he wasn't in the First World War. He just missed it. Yes. But his experiences out in India, and also seeing what happened to horses in war was a dreadful thing. And also, cavalry was very ineffective, as was demonstrated in Poland at the beginning of the Second World War. And so he realised very early on that armour was the answer. And he was instrumental in developing quite a lot of tactics for armoured warfare. And he went to France with the 1st Armoured Division at the Dunkirk time. They were in the south, actually. They didn't come out through Dunkirk. And he was responsible, as on the administrative side, for making sure the resupply of the tanks with their fuel and the ammunition worked according to plan. His system was taken on by the rest of the army, because it was the first time we'd had to do it, so they had a pattern to work for. And he did that. Then he finished that. He came back to England. He was in charge of armoured training, and they did various exercises up in Yorkshire. And then he commanded 6th Armoured Division, which went to North Africa, and they fought through North Africa. Then he was promoted to take over. He did an infantry division for a bit in Italy, and then was given a corps, and he went up through Italy and ended up in Austria. From then on, he went to... first of all, he came back to England, where he was military secretary for a bit, which is personnel, then director of military training, and then he was taken out from that and made CNC of the army, the land forces in Germany, in BAOR, which he did for 2 years. And then he moved on to the Far East, where he was CNC Middle East Land Forces for another 2 years. Then he came back from there to Egypt, where he was... The Canal Zone is where they were based, where he was CNC Middle East Land Forces for a further 2 years. And then he had to move his headquarters from Cairo, from the Canal Zone, into Cyprus, because we were hoofed out of Egypt. And about 18 months later, he found himself appointed as commander-in-chief of the UK, of all the forces for the Suez affair, and found himself getting his troops to go back into the canal, fight all their way down. And, of course, that was fine. There was a lot of concern about the Israeli influence on all this, and this has been looked at back and forth. And it was... They knew that the Israelis were coming in, they creep in and they make plans. The French were particularly devious about all this, more so than the English, actually. But that was that. He finished that, and then after the Suez affair, he had to write up his dispatches. He needed leave after all that, and he moved from that to take over as governor of Gibraltar in, I think it was June of 62.
Yeah.
Was that right? No, June 58.
58.
June 58. So that was him.
Mm.
And
but I mean, all of that, you know, growing up, you and your brother Patrick, growing up in the with your father in that position, you must have been quite steeped in sort of military.
Well, yes and no. I mean, he didn't talk shop.
No.
With the family at all. And that was a good thing and quite right. But it was a natural for my brother and me, because in the war we all had dinky toys, which were all military vehicles, and everyone is in uniform. So it was a natural, really, to be involved with military things. I think subsequently people are not so much involved
in military things. Was it assumed that once you finished your schooling and your college, etc., that you would go into the army?
Assumed by who is the question. Mm. I don't think it was assumed by my parents, but I actively wanted to. It was an exciting-looking life. You were providing a service to the system, one felt. It was a service. And also it was an interesting time with nice people to work with.
Absolutely.
All of those things were factors. And at the end of the war, of course, everything got very relaxed, and certainly when one was time up in Yorkshire at Catterick, that was a fairly relaxed time. And it was predictable, that was the other nice thing. You knew you were going to go on exercises, and then occasionally you got whipped out to go to Korea or something like that, which I missed, actually, just. Mm. But, you know, you could tell what was going to happen next year. You knew when the exercises were going to be, and you can plan your life and your leave and stuff accordingly. Mm. Not like nowadays.
No.
Quite different, and I feel very sorry for the people in the services nowadays.
They're very hard-pressed and very busy.
And they can't tell what's going to happen next, either.
No.
I'm afraid.
No.
Which is difficult.
Which is another thing for military strategy, isn't it?
I'm afraid.
Defence planning.
Exactly that.
Okay, well, that's a really nice insight into your family background and your military background. Let's focus a little bit now on your father in Gibraltar. He went there, really, as we mentioned just before the interview, when it was still really a bit of a post-war, but still very much a colony, and it was moving from colony to British Overseas Territory. But there was also the sort of Cold War bit still there.
Yes, it was an interesting time. I mean, certainly when we first went there, one is very naive when one's in one's 20s about that sort of thing, and neither my wife nor I really appreciated the political situation and background, but it began to become apparent, because we used to go out there, my wife and I, and with a child when they were born, regularly, every year, for our holiday. It was a nice free holiday. Also, great fun. And as a family, we've always been very close as a family. Mm-hmm. And my mother and father would take tremendous trouble to make sure they weren't committed elsewhere when we were out there with them. And that had been the case all the way through, actually. They were very good and did things with us all the time. And so, although there were moments when we had excitements, which I'll come to in due course, on the whole, we didn't notice a great deal of strain, my wife and I. I mean, what impressions? We went for our honeymoon, that was easy, and as I said, it was a family home. And then the next summer we went out, and again, it was very much a family affair, and they'd organised trips into Spain for us, which was very easy. We went to Granada, the Alhambra, and all that, and wonderful trips out there. Mm. We went up the rock. We were very taken by the apes, as usual.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it was decided that the next two that were born, we called Richard and Caroline, which are my wife's and my names, which we thought rather insulting, but there we are, it was done. And at that time, the governor had a cottage at the top of the rock, the governor's cottage. And I only went there once, actually. I think my brother went there a lot more when he was recouping from his wound. But again, there was a governor's beach. He was given a launch, all that sort of thing. It was very much empire stuff.
And very much colonial and
all that.
And empire.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all the trimmings.
All the trimmings. Yes. Which was, that's the way it was done in those days. And it wasn't questioned at all by anybody.
No.
And I think, funnily enough, I think the Gibraltarians quite liked that aspect of it, because it was the way they were used to things being handled by the British at that time. And they were all very friendly. And certainly my, even then, at first, it was quite apparent that my mother and father made a lot of very good friends amongst the Gibraltarians and also amongst the Spaniards, whom they saw quite a lot of.
Now, that's interesting because in the wartime, some of the wartime accounts, we got immediately post-war, the relationship between the authorities in Gibraltar, the governor and some of his staff, and the Spanish was very, very good. Did you see, was it still like that? When
it was certainly, there was never any antagonism that we detected. And sort of examples of that, we used to go to Algeciras for the New Year's Eve in the reign of Christina and all that, which is where the Germans used to spot our ships from in the war. Yeah. And people were very friendly. And it was just like going to any good hotel anywhere, really. Mm. And we used to go over to Campamento to play polo and to play golf and to go, there was a bull ring a bit further up the hill, which we used to go and watch the bulls being dealt with, and get absolutely no problem at all.
Mm.
And it was very interesting for us.
And you could go across the border without any hindrance?
At that time, yes.
Yes.
Because you just drove across, quite frankly.
Mm.
And I think that the troubles there started a little later, as you probably know when it actually started.
About 64 or something.
Yeah, something like that. But certainly while we were there, there was never any problem.
Mm. Okay.
And again, the Guardia Civil were very friendly and all that.